All in preparation for the challenges that lie ahead. This is a show that feeds the mind with inspiration and truth on the issues of the day. If it's important to your life, you'll find it here. Hosted by Malcolm Out Loud.
Well, does anybody remember the 70s? Yeah, I'm talking about the 1970s. You remember all of the fancy clothing and the bell bottoms and all of that? Well, I've got something for you a little bit later in the show. Five things you did in the 70s that you could never do today, because it would be a problem. Also, 13 bad habits you should break in 2016 to be more productive. It's Malcolm All Out here. Welcome to the show. You know, I was seeing this piece here from Pope Francis as we came into a new year, where he was asking the media to cover more good news. And it kind of struck me because as I see, you know, Pope Francis, he comes out and he talks about it. And, you know, and I kind of chuckled when I see it because the media doesn't like good news. They sort of get pretty well planted on the bad news. But he said good things don't make the news. Well, he's right. They don't make the news. And he then said to the congregation, this is one of his talks now, how many great gestures of goodness, love, and solidarity have filled the days of this year, even if they are not on television news programs? And I'll tell you what, the pontiff is 100% right. What I find, my friends, is there is a lot of good news in the world. We just don't hear it. We don't hear anything about it because that's not what the media sells. They think people want to hear this bad news. Well, I got a man coming up now that I think we'll get in discussion with, and he may beg to differ a little bit too. I want you to meet Rich Wessenberg. Rich Wessenberg, he's not a newcomer to radio. He is often featured on Christian talk radio stations across the nation. You know, he's got a book out. It's called Treasures of the Believing Heart. And I'll tell you what, I've got to have to read this because Worldwide Gospel News came out and said it was the read of the year. And that is a great compliment if they say that. So, you know, Rich, welcome to the show. It's just an honor to have you with me today.
Malcolm, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, super. So let's get into this a little bit here. I want to talk to you a little bit about some of this here. And, you know, I find as we get into a new year, some of the things we talk about here is resolutions. We all sort of resolve. I think most people resolve to have a better year. And, you know, the key is, are you going to make things? And I've talked about this on the show, Rich. Do people make the right resolutions so that they can accomplish the resolutions? You know, some people, it's pie in the sky. They sort of go for things that they know they're not gonna do, but somehow they think for a few days it makes them feel good to think that, you know, this is some sort of resolution. In fact, I read just the other day here, by the way, only 8% of resolutions stay intact. That's all that is. And almost, by the way, over 50% of the people commit to resolutions. I think it was like 52, 53% or something of people. And I think you talk about the fact that a lot of people make, one of the resolutions they make is to renew their faith in God and to recommit their relationship with God. And that seems to be a pretty big resolution coming into a new year, huh?
Well, of course. I think when you look at all the things you can do in your life and commit to, everybody eventually finds that crossroads of, what am I going to do for God? Am I, you know, the Curious George takes over, and you see a lot of these situations it come up in people's lives. But when even the New Year's resolution, that I think if that's going to help the momentum and help you in your life to do it, but then go through with it with a full heart, because you will not be disappointed. That's one of even the promises in the Bible, Malcolm, that a person will not be disappointed if they really wanted to do more and live for God.
Yeah. Well, I think what we've seen in the world in recent times, Rich, is people in general are under more stress than they've ever been through, you know, in their lives. And a lot of people their lives have been turned upside down in the past few years. I mean, for a lot of reasons, Rich. I mean, I could give you several factors right off the top. We've had an economic recovery that is the strangest in our lifetimes. And a lot of people have never recovered from it, quite frankly, and the losses and stuff that's happened over the last, you know, 10 years, let's say. Last decade has been tough for Americans and for people around the world in general. And then you've got, you know, you've got crime again. You've got all these terrorist activities and bad news that kind of fill in it. So I think you talk about, you know, being persistent. And one of the things I like about some of your message here is you by the way, have been a minister for many years. I think people may not know that about you, but you've actually preached the Word of God and understand what it is to minister to people. But I think people fall down a lot. They don't really... They lose the traction of having a positive, fulfilling life, and somehow these obstacles get in their way. So when you tell yourself you're a resiliency expert, how can we all be more resilient in life because of these challenges, you know, that we go through?
You bet. And these challenges, to me, are really a test on the inside. It's like one of the great lessons from the Bible, clean the inside of the cup and the outside may be clean also. Well, really, that's talking about not on the outside of the cup, the power of God, but on the inside, those treasures of the believing heart. And so what I'm really getting to, Malcolm, is that what people can do is grow, as we grow internally, and it doesn't get any bigger with the knowledge of God, you're going to build your believing heart strong. And the Bible says to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. And once you start that journey, and it takes time, and we're all a work in progress, but I would say you would not be disappointed in this journey. And you'll see that in these things that have been limiting in our lives, God promises ways to escape. He has made promises to do exceedingly abundantly above all we can ask or think. Really, Malcolm, we need to get our lives up to this bar that God has set the standards in his word.
Yeah, well said. You know, part of the stats here, again, as I was saying just a moment ago, that more than half of Americans make some sort of resolution to get closer to God in the new year, and that relationships in general with God and faith are very, very important to folks. And so I think as we turn into a new year and we understand the cycle here, I think a lot of us want to improve life, Rich. Let me pause a moment and tell folks, we're speaking to Rich Wessenberg, and again, Rich, the book Treasures of the Believing Heart. I like that title. We'll talk a little bit more about that just ahead and talk about our faith and how we can all have a better relationship with God. And I think faith is an important part of our lives. I think all of us need to really, and I think in stressful times, I think we can use a little more faith in our lives. Huh, Rich?
That's for sure, Malcolm. Yeah. Can't get enough of it.
No, I think it helps us all be better people. So we'll talk more about that ahead. Again, big show here today for you folks. Again, we're talking about that. I love this, the 1970s. We'll talk about some of that ahead. And again, Pope Francis is looking for more good news, so we're going to give it to you. It's Malcolm Aloud here. We'll be right back right after the break with Rich Wessenberg. All right, we're back. We're back with Rich Wessenberg. And again, Rich, he's on a lot of Christian radio talk stations. And Worldwide Gospel says his book, Treasures of the Believing Heart, is the read of the year. Why did they say that, Rich? What? Tell me about Treasures of the Believing Heart, the motivation behind the book, and you know, what we might learn from it.
Well, I initially wrote this book for my kids. I just wanted to get down everything that I knew about believing, Malcolm. Through my career as a minister and then even working in the secular world and the business world, we use the word believing, and it's just used it so haphazardly. And initially, that was the title of the book. But as I worked it and got into the depth of this particular subject matter, it really opened up to me that, you know, not believing is tied to our core values, and it's tied to hope. And that concept of faith, hope, and love, which is spoken quite frequently, a verse in 1 Corinthians 13, and that love is the greatest. And you look at these great lessons from the Bible, but coming back to really what this message is about, treasures of the believing heart, it's about us. There's a lot of treasures we can build in our hearts, but when we build the truths of God's word, truth in itself, and we can speak the truth to one another, that truth in our hearts, whatever it is on the subject matter, it has power to it. And that's what we want to build our hearts with, and not crowd it with fears, not crowd it with disappointments, not crowd it with bitterness. What we've got to do is realize that we become our own worst enemies when we do that. And the inside of the cup is then tainted.
Yeah, we are. You use a big word there. I want to talk about fear. Fear is a very big word to me, okay? And I think fear has become part of our, it's become part of the dialect we're using now in every aspect of our lives and in the media, and just, I think people are in fear, Rich. So how do we, you know, handle all the fear-based things that are out there when people turn on, you know, whatever it is, radio, television, the print, online, everything seems to be fear-based. And I just think the media seems to be fixated on that. It's probably why the Pope just came out and said he's asking the media to cover more good news. I kind of chuckled at that. It was so ironic to me that over the new year, the Pope would come out and say that, you know?
Well, you know, he's got a great point there. And, you know, when we look at the media and all the negatives it throws at us, and then we put that in our own hearts and minds, it's gonna take over all the good things. And so we've got to really watch how we focus our minds and our intentions, the things we dwell on, and guard our hearts. The Bible instructs us to guard your heart with all diligence, because out of it are the issues of life. We got to guard our hearts and at the same time build it and grow. And, you know, we go to media, we try to read the papers, what's online, what famous people are saying, and we're growing. But at the same time, if we took that same personal growth into what I bring to the forefront of my book, is to build the good treasures of God's word in your hearts, so that that can be a lot of our focus. And one of the great lessons is, as we grow from the milk of God's word to its meat, not only can we discern spiritually what is good and evil, but we're going to grow from the milk of God's words to its meat to become spiritually mature.
Well, how do we be, you know, we talk about this resiliency. When things aren't going well, and when your life is falling apart, or whatever's happening, you know, these complications, what are some of the biggest lessons that somebody can work with and use in order to stay resilient through hard times, Rich?
Well, one of the key things about resiliency biblically is that we can't change the past. This is in the Philippians. Paul talks about this. We learn from it, but the best thing we can do is to keep reaching forward. And Malcolm, I'm sure you're a person like this. I've just seen it working with you as we've worked together. But real successful people are continuing to move forward in their minds and their hearts. The hardest target to hit is a moving target. And your heart is a target. And so as you, if you have situations in the past, you've had failures, you learn from it, and you treat it like a wound. You don't rip open the bandage, you got to let it heal. And then you take your focus, and a great lesson too is to help others then. If you're so much thinking about yourself, I mean, my goodness, that's where a lot of people don't get their needs met. You can have some people who have all kinds of abundance in their life and plurality, and then they're just the most miserable people in the world. The key is that, hey, you know what? This heart, this believing heart, is designed to reach forward, forget the past. Reaching forward is them moving ahead. You'll see the needs of others. And that's really a great way to live life, Malcolm.
Yeah, no, man, that is so well said, my friend. Brother, you hit several nerves there to me. And I just think, you know, as we all try to live a more fulfilling life and do the right things, you know, you pick up on so many things. As we come into 2016, and as we're now into a whole new year here, I think we have to realize that, you know, there's going to be this fear factor of, you kind of can't hide. You can't put your head in the sand and live in that way. You've got to live in today and tomorrow. The point of the fact, Rich, too many people live in yesteryear. Again, I have what I call a 10-90 rule. I'll remind people again right now about it. Only use the rearview mirror 10% of the time as history lessons. Use the front mirror in your life 90% of the time. It's Malcolm's 10-90 rule, okay? And I know that from growing up in a large family. I seen too many people around me that were living in the past, and they would never, you can't do anything about history. You can't fix it. You can only learn from it. And if you're spending more than 10% of the time there, I'm afraid that you're wasting your time, Rich. And a lot of people are doing that.
Isn't it so? And that's just our nature. It's our old man nature. The Bible talks about this. This is such of the great lessons. Where else are you going to learn about that you have this old man nature that just loves to dwell on the negatives? And the media feeds on this.
That's right.
But the Bible talks about becoming the new man and putting on the mind of Christ. And that mind of Christ, I mean, when we look at that biblically, this was a man who went about doing good and healing all those who were oppressed by the power of darkness. I mean, that's what we want to be on. We don't want to be the hunted. We want to become, in an essence, a way of a good, loving hunter, in the essence of we're reaching forward. We're not set in the past, like you said. And thus, our focus changes, your life changes, and actually, you're going to allow God to work mightily in your life.
You know, you said it's hard to hit a moving target. If you keep moving forward, you're moving. I take several lessons from that when you just said it that way. Kind of interesting to me. What's the biggest lesson that somebody gets out of reading Treasures of the Believing Heart, my friend?
Well, the forefront of the preface, I say there's a lot of treasures out in this world that you can use to build your heart. But the Bible, the number one selling book all time, 5 billion printed, 300 languages in 300 languages, there's a reason. People are hungry for truth. And so what my book can do, it has. There's a lot of great ways to learn biblically how to study the Bible. What mine does, it takes and rips open what I call the believing heart. And you look at those peoples in the Bible, and you look at their hearts and their values. Everybody had a different one, but each one had certain long suits, certain core values. They all had the love of God. And then when you look at them from the inside out and see the outcomes that happened to them in the written eternity book, the Bible, now you have a different perspective of their lives, not just the name Moses, but Moses, the man from the inside out.
Well, we all kind of need to probably, we could all learn from that in our life, right? To look at the inside out, you know?
Yes, because, yep.
I mean, it gets in all kinds of things. I think we judge too much in this world. We judge too much as a people. We don't accept things for people for who they are and what they are. And I think there's a lot of lessons in there, my friend. And a lot of that plays into the daily news. I mean, it's what people are getting out of all the bad news out there. And, you know, by far and large, I mean, I think rich people are good. I get a lot of good out of people. I really do. And I really believe that 90, I don't know what the number is, but I'm going to say, you know, 95%, I think at least, are good people. Now, I think it's those bad seeds out there that kind of do it, you know?
That's true. And, you know, there are so many good people, so many good things happening around us in our communities, which you can be a part of. You know, one of the things is to be isolated. You know, you're going to feel your best when you're out moving around, and, you know, there's actually a hormone that kicks in into place in our lives when, you know, you put the core value, the love of God in. But, you know, Malcolm, when you buy a new puppy and you hug it and so cute, or the first time you, like for me, when I saw my wife, there's actually a hormone called Protostin that kicks in your body. And so when you move with love and even the love of God, just wonderful things, it's even healthy for you.
Treasures of the Believing Heart again. I like this here message, and the fact that you wrote it for your kids, I mean, obviously it's something that I would assume anybody can pick up and read, huh? Understand?
The Bible is simple. It gets complicated just because of a lot of things, whether we bring to it when we go read it at first. But when we look at it and sit down and just spend some time with it, God promises in His Word, He'll open it up to you.
That's the reason I bring it up, because everything's complicated. People get too complicated with it, and that's it. Listen, last few seconds left. What's the website again people can go to?
They can go to treasuresofthebelievingheart.tateauthor.com. That's my author website. They can buy my book online anywhere on online bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the biggies,
Wordery. Right. Rich Wessenberg. And again, Rich, such a pleasure to talk with you today. And we will do it again, sir. And it's all about a better relationship with God. And we're going to talk about the 1970s right when we get back from the break. Well, the 1970s were a special time in American history, and who can't remember if you're not old enough to remember the 70s? You know, you missed out on quite a colorful chapter in life. Yeah, I mean, I remember that. It was the Vietnam War, disco, bell-bottoms. Of course, our 200th year of independence happened in that decade, and, you know, life moved along. It was the Brady Bunch. But, you know, there were things that you did in the 70s you could have got away with, you could never do today. And there are five things you did in the 70s. I'm going to tell you what they are. It's Malcolm All Out here. Welcome back. And, you know, these are interesting when you think about how life evolves. And so let me give you the first one. Drinking from the garden hose. Now, what's so wrong about drinking from the garden hose? And why can't you do that today? Well, there's a study going around the internet by the Ecology Center, which says basically that drinking from the water hose is bad for your health. The study says that water from the hose contains lead. Lead's become a big problem, remember. Back then, we didn't know so much, but lead in the paint, lead in the walls, all of that stuff, you know. But anyways, the from the water hose contains lead and levels of BPA at 20 times higher than those of safe drinking water levels. It's quite a bit. So I think we always suspected that it wasn't a healthy option from the start. Now we know. And when we drank from the water hose, we didn't worry about the BPAs or lead back then. We didn't know. Of course, they say what you didn't know doesn't hurt you, but I'm not sure that's true either, my friends. You know, when we're outside playing, we all kind of use the hose sometimes to get a drink. We just wanted a quick drink. And it's not like we were drinking gallons of it, but it was always good to take the hose and have a drink. You know, I remember that. So that was something we did in the 70s we can't do. Second is playing outside unattended. You know, you remember that growing up myself, I remember my folks, we lived in a duplex, you know, side-by-side houses my folks owned. And there was a sort of a place in the back where you'd open up the doors. I forget what you call those. You'd open up the doors, you'd be able to walk down into a basement. Up in the Northeast, you had a basement. You don't get that in the South, of course, with the water table and all. But, you know, we never thought, playing outside was just, that was second nature. We never thought about it. There was nothing wrong with it, you know. Well, what's happened just recently was a mother in Florida who faces up to 5 years in jail for letting her 7-year-old son go to the park to play unattended. That's quite interesting. I didn't know that could happen. So the offense was child neglect. And the same thing happened for a Maryland couple. Let the kids play unattended in their own neighborhood. So I guess I don't know what the age factor is legally where you can't let them out to play on their own. But more importantly than that, you know, you just don't know today who's stopping by and people are picking up the kids or what's happening. I mean, you got to keep them in your sight. At least till they're about 41 or 42, I think. You know that, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, going through their 20s is no picnic either. So anyways, got to watch them. Can't play outside unattended is another thing you might have done in the 70s you cannot do today. How about this one? Sitting on your father's lap while he's driving. Now, I used to sit in the front between mom and dad sometimes. Of course, we never wore seatbelts back then. I never remember a seatbelt. But you can't sit on your father's lap while driving now. And of course, I got car sick easy, so I could never sit in the back seat. I had to sit in the front seat or I'd get real sick and it would not be a pretty scene. It would be a mess. But, you know, one of the greatest memories, what they're saying here is growing up sitting on the father's lap. I guess a lot of people did that. If you're caught today doing that, you get a ticket. And you get, I think they go on to say in some places, it will revoke your license and everything else. Well, it's just like you have to have the kids now in car seats. Back then, I don't think you needed a car seat either. I don't think that was illegal. Now it's really very much illegal. You got to have seat belts on in most states. So, you know, a lot of that's happened, but you cannot sit on your father's lap while he's driving. And can't do that anymore. And another one, number four, children buying cigarettes for their parents. You know, a lot of places aren't selling cigarettes anymore. A lot of those convenience stores. You remember CVS Pharmacy, one of the big national pharmacy chains, they just cut it out recently. They said they want to be known more for health than smoking. And they got rid, you can't buy cigarettes anymore at a CVS. I think you can still buy them at a Walgreens or some of the other pharmacies, Rite Aid or whatever they are out there. But you can't buy them at a CVS, I know. It was a good marketing ploy for them, I think. But back then in the 70s, children were buying cigarettes for their parents, and this was a way to save time, and they never thought any twice about it. But smoking was different then. They kind of thought it was acceptable. My mother smoked. I mean, my sister did as well, and they both died of lung cancer. I mean, smoking's a bad thing. I mean, you try to avoid it if you can, but you can't do that today. Can't send your kid in for cigarettes at all. I mean, that's not going to fly. For a lot of reasons, you know, in fact, one of the states I just said to you the other day, it was Hawaii, if I remember right, just raised the smoking age from 18 to 21. And that's the first state in the union. I'm pretty sure it's Hawaii. And I think you're going to see more states probably follow suit on that. You know, could see that happen in a lot of states, I think. And the next one, spanking your child. Child abuse is a big problem. Whatever they call it in your state, DCF or HRS or child services or whatever. You know, most people today equate spanking with child abuse, beatings. And the other problem is people take things out of context. You know, your neighbor hears something and they take it out of context and say, oh, did you know such and such is happening, you know? There are a lot of examples of parents who abuse their children and say it's just basic discipline. But spankings today could, you know, in the 70s, you never thought. In fact, I'll be honest with you right now. My father had a nine-tail strap. A lot of you might remember that back then. We all had these. Your father would use a strap, and he'd spank you, all right. You'd get a good spanking. And, you know, you never had DCF at your door, or child services banging at your door. That never happened back then in the 70s. Today, I got news for you. They'd be all over you. You see these stories out there all the time of that kind of thing happen. You know, spankings, sometimes they turn into other problems, you know, big spankings and things. So you got to be careful with that today. You got to be careful how you discipline your child. And of course, it's real difficult because some kids are difficult to discipline, you know, and the upbringing of your child, like I said just a while ago to you, by the time they're 6, 7, 8, 9, your kid's personality is formed, who they're going to be as an adult and the way they think. And, you know, it's kind of funny. That's why a lot of kids, they get that, a lot of those feelings from their parents. Yeah, you think about, I always think about that today with young people that are Democrats or Republicans. They say, well, how do they become a Democrat or Republican? 9 out of 10 times, you can always look at the mother or father. I mean, lifelong Democrats, lifelong Republicans. It goes from generation to generation, family to family. It just keeps going. So you can look back and see that, you know, it's all part of their family upbringing. And that kind of is true with a lot of things that you get from your family. But again, one of the things I say from there is you can't be a victim. You have to be a victor. A lot of people carry this stuff away from their childhood and they never really grow up and they keep blaming it on their childhood. And at some point, your mind over matter, you've got to get your mind in place to fix some of this stuff. But a lot of people have a hard time with this, my friends, and they keep a lot of this bad stuff with them that they learned maybe as adolescents in the young age. So, well, I remember the 70s. I must say, I do remember the 70s. I was a young. Did I say young? I was a real young boy at the time. But those are 5 things you did in the 70s you could never do today. You cannot drink from the garden hose today because it could get you sick. Playing outside unattended is a problem. Sitting on your father's lap while he's driving. Children buying cigarettes, you can't do that anymore. And spanking, can't spank your kid either. Those are a lot of things you can't do today. But, you know, there are more bad habits you need to break probably moving into 2016 to be really, really productive. Well, I'm going to help you be really, really productive right after the break. Be right back with you. Well, you know, we live, we learn. I think there's a lot to that. I think we all get better as we go, or I hope we do anyways. It's Malcolm out here. Welcome back. And I think that's the key, is you learn from your failures. You know, anybody who says they're not failing or haven't failed in their life, they're fooling themselves. I mean, they're not fooling anybody else. We all fail. As human beings, we all fall down sometimes. And the key to life, my friends, is how many times you pick yourself up. But the biggest thing is, if you really want to say, well, I'm really like successful, well, it probably means you fell down a whole lot. And I think my measurement of success is if you can stand up the last time you failed, if you stood up longer than the many times you failed, did you stay up standing at the end? Yeah, you're going to fall down. You're going to fail. There's no question. But again, how do we live and learn? And how do we take some of these bad habits and break through them? And we all have bad habits. I mean, come on. It's all something. It's our conditioning. It's who we are. Some of us know how to live and tolerate maybe our bad habits, but others, they hold us back. That really is the key. So we need some life lessons here. We need to talk about more of this. And so here we go. I'll give you 13 bad habits you really should break in 2016 to be more productive. And, you know, there's a whole lot more like this, by the way, back at brinkofgreatness.com. Yeah, it's real life, my friends. And find a whole lot more back there to help you out. So the first one, impulsive web browsing. Okay. A lot of us get lost on the internet. I got friends who do this all the time and people I relate to pretty well who they get totally lost on the internet. I mean, they just, I never ask them to go look for something for me or to do something because I might lose them for days, weeks, or months and not find them again. I mean, I see that really. People tend to get lost. It's hard for them to stay focused. It really is about being focused. I think I said a few days back, I think everybody has a little bit of ADD in them. I think we all have a little bit of attention deficit disorder to whatever degree that is, but it's hard for some of us to stay focused, you know? But I think, you know, to get lost on the internet is a real problem. This impulsive web browsing where you go off, I think you need to limit that in your life to small doses so you don't get totally lost in it. Now, another one they're saying here, another one of the big habits you need to break in 2016, they're saying multitasking. Now, I wouldn't have known that at all. I think multitasking can be good and it can be bad. I think it can be both. Multitasking to some degree is good, but they're saying here, many people believe they're great at doing 2 things at once. All right, well, I understand that. Scientific research has found that just 2% of the population is capable of effectively multitasking and doing 2 things at once. Wow. For the rest of us, multitasking is a bad habit. It decreases our attention span and makes us less productive in the long run. Now, I probably suspect this of a lot of people. Like, if I'm really having a conversation with somebody, I, first of all, like to look people in the eye rather than social media kind of stuff and through technology. But I do think that a lot of times I like to have somebody's undivided attention, just like I'll give you my undivided attention if you need it or want it, just like you're giving me your undivided attention right now, right? You're not multitasking right now, are you? Well, it's one of the bad habits they say you need to break in 2016. Checking email throughout the day. You know, these people who keep checking and checking. Well, there are a lot of technology nerds who can't get away from any of it. I mean, they got to check everything. I mean, these are people at dinner with cell phones on their hands. I mean, they got cell phones, they got tablets, they got all kinds of things they're looking at. I mean, come on. You see that all the time at dinner. You see people out there socializing. I mean, there's a time and place for everything. You know, but these people, they're saying one of the bad habits is when you check email throughout the day, every couple of minutes. And they say when you do that, you lose up to 25 minutes of work time, they're saying. You know, they're saying you can lose up to 25 minutes of work time every time you stop and you go ahead. And it actually says here, it makes you dumber. That's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. But they say to quit out of that stuff and don't keep looking. There is a point about being really focused on what you're doing. So, you know, all right. So another thing to be habit you need to break in 2016 to be more productive. And this one I have to read in a little bit more with you. More licensing. They say whether it's a new diet, workout routine, or work schedule, one of the most difficult things about forming a new habit is the urge to cheat as a reward for sticking to a routine for a while. The idea that we deserve to splurge on fancy meals after being, you know, 30 for a week is called moral licensing. I see where they're going with this. Okay, moral licensing. Instead, try making your goal part of your identity, such that you think of yourself as the kind of person who saves money or works out regularly, rather than as someone who's working against their own will to do something new. Well, that's some good advice, actually, in there. I understand what they're saying now about moral licensing, number four. Next one, putting off your most important work until later in the day. This is a big one, and a lot of people do this. They push the things off that they don't want to do, and the most important things until later in the day. That is a big, big mistake, folks. Get it done. Get it done early, get it done. I say this all the time to people. Sixth one on the list, taking too many meetings. Man, do I agree with this one. It's another one I say all the time, taking too many meetings. I mean, you can't get anything done if you're always meeting. And a lot of people, this open door policy in the corporate world is insane. And they brag about it, like, oh, I got an open door policy. Like, what are you, some kind of a fool? You just want people stopping and interrupting you at any point of the day? No, thank you. I got a closed door policy. I'll tell you when I'm available. So number six, taking too many meetings, this is. And this is an interesting piece we're talking about from Business Insider. You'll find this up on our Twitter feed as well, at Malcolm Out Loud. I'll put it up there for you. You can go check it out. Sitting all day. Number seven, sitting all day. This is a problem, obviously, for a lot of reasons. A lot of reasons. We get very stagnant. We feel very lethargic. You know, got to get ourselves moving. And it doesn't do good for our gut either. You know, you're surprised they say here how fresh air drives fresh thinking. I agree with that. Sometimes I just got to get outside. And you know another thing they say here, which is absolutely correct because I've looked at studies on this, fluorescent lights. They suck your energy. So true. If you're working in some sort of place with fluorescent lights, I'm telling you, folks, they kill your energy. It's a problem. Eighth one on the list, hitting the snooze button. Hitting the snooze button. You know, if you keep hitting this, first of all, when you're in a deep sleep and you keep doing that, it just kind of works backwards. And a lot of times just before you wake up is when you're having your best sleep, they say. So you got to be real careful with it. But if you keep hitting the snooze button, that's not a good thing, they're saying, because, first of all, this isn't to say you shouldn't cut back on sleep, they say, but a good night's sleep has the power to increase productivity, happiness, smarter. I get all that. But still, I don't do the snooze button. When I'm ready to get up, I get up. You know, I agree with that. Failing to prioritize. Another big problem. You don't put things first and some things later on. You kind of do too much and you're not prioritizing. In fact, a lot of the times our priorities are at the end of the list. We're focused on all the busy stuff and our priorities fall off. This is a real problem. Now, it says here, Warren Buffett has the perfect antidote, he says here. Seeing that his personal pilot was not accomplishing his life goals, Buffett asked him to make a list of 25 things he wanted to get done before he died. But rather than taking little steps toward completing every one of them, Buffett advised the pilot to pick 5 things he thought were most important and ignore the rest. I like that. So I agree with that, prioritizing. And number 10, over-planning. Over-planning. Again, these are the 13 bad habits you need to break in 2016. And over-planning is a problem because you obviously, how are you going to get there if you over-plan? If you're too ambitious, many ambitious and organized people try to maximize their productivity by meticulously planning out every hour of their day. And I know some people like this. They drive me crazy, actually. Say, get up, jump off the cliff, man. It's a balance. It says here you might want to try planning just 4 or 5 hours of real work every day. That way you're able to be flexible later on. And underplanning is number 11. Got to be careful when you underplan. In other words, if you're just winging it all day long, every hour of the day, or jumping off cliffs or say, here we are, well, then that's not going to work either. And number 12, keeping your phone next to your bed. Now, I do that strictly for my alarm in the morning. I use it for my alarm, but I don't use it for any other reason. In fact, I have it turned over so the screen doesn't come on and wake me up, or I don't want to see what's going on. But I got to have it for the alarm. I don't use one of those old farty alarms. I use the phone. Easy to do, and I'm used to it now. So, but keeping your phone next to bed, they say, is a problem, and it could be a real problem. And the last one, perfectionism. This is one I probably have. I'm a perfectionist myself. Says here, more often than laziness, the root of procrastination is the fear of not doing a good job. British philosopher and author Alan D. Bodden and his website, The Book of Life, we begin to work only when the fear of doing nothing at all exceeds the fear of not doing it very well. And that can take time, he writes. Now, I want to do a good job, though. I think I've worked through my perfectionist fears, but I am still a bit of a perfectionist. I guess that's probably comes from the fact I'm a marketer, and it was always about having the house in order. You always talk about having the house in order before you get out there and start, you know, yelling from the mountaintops. But I think it is a balance in life about this perfectionist business. You got to be careful with it. But again, those are, I learned some things there. The 13 bad habits you should break in 2016 to be more productive. From Business Insider. We'll put it up on the Twitter feed at Malcolm Out Loud. Hey, it's good to have you with me today again. I had a lot of fun, so much that I think we'll do it again tomorrow. Remember, folks, get involved, get loud.